Welcome to the Fastest 5 Minutes, a bi-weekly summary of legal and regulatory developments that no government contracts, lawyer, or executive should be without. We are your co-hosts, David Robbins and Peter Ayer, and we're delighted to bring you what's gone on this summer in the last couple of weeks. We open with debarment news. On July 3rd, the Office of Management and Budget issued an interim final action amending the OMB guidance to agencies to implement a section of the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal 2017 that prohibits awards to persons or entities involved in activities that violate arms control treaties or agreements with the United States. The revision is to the non-procurement common rule, that's 2 CFR 180, and so on, and adds to the definition of covered transactions to include direct awards, regardless of tier or amount, for non-procurement and procurement transactions, to exempt foreign persons, entities, and organizations if such persons, entities, or organizations have engaged in any activity that contributed to or is a significant factor in a country's non-compliance with its obligations under arms control, non-proliferation, or disarmament agreements or commitments with the United States. Now, look, as a sidebar, I guess it's good that there's an additional cause for debarment to incorporate these things, but the catch-all, any other serious or compelling, already included it, and I gotta think if people are contributing to this, they have bigger problems. But it's a development, and we bring it to you anyway, because that's what we exist to do. In defense spending news, perhaps more applicable to our day-to-day business and lives, on July 2nd, the Congressional Research Service released a report evaluating the contract spending of the Department of Defense. It specifically examined how much money DoD obligates on contracts, what DoD is buying, and where that money is being spent. The report also examines the extent to which these data are sufficiently reliable to use as a factor when developing policy or analyzing government operations. Look, this is fascinating, right? We all know that audit readiness and the like has been huge on DoD's list of priorities. They're coming up against an audit readiness deadline. That's great, right? How does the finances of DoD work? This is how does the procurement spend work, and what lessons can we draw from it? We obviously can't cover it in a 5-minute podcast, but to any of you who are interested, please look it up or just contact us. We'll forward it to you. It makes for really good reading.
I would also add to that, particularly for people who routinely use the Federal Procurement Data System or FPDS.gov, there's some very interesting insights about reliability, consistency, types of errors. So certainly worth reading, not only for overall trends, which I think are probably quite reliable, but even once you get into the nitty-gritty details, there's some really interesting insights about where there are common errors and issues in terms of reliability and consistency in that data set. So it's worth a read for that reason as well.
Great.
So now we turn to Section 809. The panel issued its second volume of the report. So just by way of background, this is the advisory panel on streamlining and codifying acquisition regulations. It was established pursuant to Section 809 of the 2016 NDAA. It's referred to as the 809 panel. And they're really focused on ways to streamline and improve DoD's acquisition system. The first volume came out a number of months ago. Volume 2 is now out. It is many hundreds of pages. At a high level, it contains recommendations relating to acquisition workforce, commercial source selection, cost accounting standard board, and services contracting. In particular, the report notes that DoD's current decision-making structures are organized around a centralized program-specific structure rather than a broader portfolio approach. To mitigate this, the 809 panel recommends a new role for the Military Services Program Executive Officers, renamed in their as Portfolio Acquisition Executives, who would be responsible for all aspects of the systems in their portfolio from initial development to long-term sustainment. We're expecting the third volume of the report in January of 2019. Probably the most important topic that David and I are tracking this week relates to a False Claims Act case coming out of the Eastern District of Kentucky. It's U.S. ex rel. Maldonado versus Ball Holmes. So this was a decision on June 29th of 2018. In this case, a federal district court granted a motion by DOJ to dismiss with prejudice a non-intervened QI-TAM suit alleging the defendants had violated the Civil False Claims Act by submitting falsified documents to obtain loans insured by the Federal Housing Administration, or FHA. After conducting its own investigation, DOJ not only declined to intervene, it also moved to dismiss over the relator's objections. DOJ concluded the relator had failed to show that the alleged false statements were material and that it had failed to identify any examples of false claims resulting in monetary damages to the United States. So this is a really interesting development. David, what's the big take home from your standpoint?
I think this is the first big piece of evidence that DOJ's posture towards False Claims Act quitam cases has changed, right? If you remember, Mike Granston gave a presentation at the Healthcare Association a number of months ago that sort of hinted at this, but then DOJ walked it back. No, it's not a changed policy. But in a series of speeches, we saw hints that this was coming, and this is really the first. We're actually actively getting out and stopping this from going forward. I think the takeaway, honestly, is that Escobar and materiality and the increase in statutory penalties has DOJ worried that they're going to get some bad law if these cases that they used to allow go forward saying, look, we're not intervening, but relator, you do what you want. I think they're fearful for what it might do to the False Claims Act as one of their primary weapons in the war on fraud. And I think this is a long answer to a short question, but this is a really big deal. What do you think?
No, I think that's exactly right. And there has been a lot of speculation about, has DOJ's posture changed? And obviously, this is just an N of one. We don't know. But, you know, you can look back many years, and there are only a very few cases where DOJ has taken this step, where they've not only declined to intervene, but then moved to dismiss. Certainly, the sequencing suggests between the speeches, the memos, and now this action that there may be some there.
Yeah.
So we'll continue to watch, but certainly something that bears monitoring and careful scrutiny.
And that's it for this issue of the Fastest 5 Minutes. Peter can be reached at 202-624-2807, and I can be reached at 202-624-2627 with any questions. We'll see you again in 2 weeks.
The Fastest 5 Minutes podcast is brought to you by Kroll & Mooring LLP. Subscribe on iTunes, and if you enjoy our show, please leave us a review. You can find more information at kroll.com/govconpodcast.